Geeks and nerds, girls and boys, do a brand new episode of Geek to Me Radio. Tonight, we have the ubiquitous, the talented, the amazing Phil Morris. For the whole hour, we're going to be talking all about his career, all about his ancestry in the world of acting, and we'll take your calls and texts, so stand by.
We're talking TV, comics and movies, and video games. Star Trek from Star Wars, we'll try to explain. There are 12 doctors, 4 Hogwarts houses, 1 ring rules and more. To be the greatest Pokemon master, you must catch them all. You must catch them all. Try to catch them all. Gotta catch.
Driving around the greater St. Louis area tonight, listening to us on the big 550 KTRS. Hello to all of you. Thank you very much for listening tonight on this beautiful Sunday. If you are streaming us on the World Wide Web via Facebook or YouTube with the video, hello to all of you there. Thank you very much for watching. And of course, as always, if you're listening to us after the fact in the podcast form, we do appreciate you finding us there. And hopefully you've subscribed by this point, left us a 5-star review. That always helps us in search engine optimization and all that kind of technical stuff that I don't understand, but supposedly helps us out. So we appreciate that as well. A lot to get into tonight, so we're going to go right to the guest. He is just, as I said in the intro, ubiquitous. He's got a family that's in show business. We're going to talk to as much of that as we can. Phil Morris, thank you for being on the show tonight.
James, I appreciate having me, man. I love being here. Happy Sunday to everybody.
And we've already got some people joining the chats. We've got Chance Bartels from Atlanta. Hello, Chance. Thank you very much for listening all the way down in Atlanta. BK on the air from Cartersville, Georgia. So we got some Georgia listeners tonight. We appreciate you listening down there in Atlanta and Cartersville. One of the things I didn't realize the last time, because you've got an extensive IMDb thing. It needs to like have like a whole team in Geneva studying this to get all the details. You were in a show that I used to watch. It came on after American Gladiators on the local Channel 11 here called Marblehead Manor. I loved this show as a child. It was so, I found it very funny to a young me. And I'm just curious, did you have, was that a good experience working on that particular show?
It was fantastic. I that's so funny you should mention Marblehead Manor, because very few people know it existed, and even fewer probably saw it. It was an experiment by NBC at the time to do an early prime time. So prime time usually starts at 8 o'clock. So they were going to roll it back an hour. So they had us, a show with Suzanne Summers called She's the Sheriff.
Yeah.
And there was another, and there was another show with Donna Pescow, which I forget the name of. But we were an experiment to see if, in fact, viewers would watch earlier than the 8 o'clock hour, and we were really the only show that stuck. So the experiment wasn't very successful, but for me, the show was amazing. It was based on a British production called Noises Off, which is a pretty farcical entrances and exits on and off again British comedy that is fantastic, and it takes a lot of comedy chops to pull that off. So we were working with a guy named Paxton Whitehead, who was one of the stars of Noises Off. And so they hired Paxton. He was the star of the show. He played the butler in this household full of misfits and miscreants, of which I was the chauffeur, and a man named Rodney Hudson played my brother, who was the gardener. And in fact, this is going to lead to other stuff, but Michael Richards played the gardener in that. And Michael Richards, everybody knows, probably was Kramer on Seinfeld. And that's where he and I first got a chance to know each other. And we got a chance to go to basketball games together. I hung out at his house, watching silent movies together. So it was a really full experience. I really loved the show. It taught me a lot about situation comedy, quite frankly, and comedy in general.
And I know Paxton Whitehead just passed away. I say recently, but 2020
2 years ago.
My brain off. So it's been a little while, I think. But yeah,
COVID has everybody, 2 years behind. I always think it was like yesterday, but no.
Yeah.
It's pre-COVID or post-COVID.
Was it? Okay. Yeah. I feel like we're in the 52nd month of 2020 as of right now, so I'm all thrown off. But I remember seeing Paxton Whitehead pop up on an episode of Heart to Heart, and he played the villain. And that was the second time I was like, this is weird. He's a bad guy now? He's the butler. How is he, you know? And again, little young me watching these shows, I had no conception of, you know, it's an actor playing a part. But, and then you.
No, it was a reality.
Right. Yeah. And you, when I look over all this series that you've starred in and worked on, I mean, first of all, let me just say, to get your start, your very first on-screen role in Star Trek, come on.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
What an amazing, I mean, as a kid too, obviously you grew up, as we mentioned in the beginning too, your dad was an actor, well-known and well-established
right.
actor.
My dad was a man named Greg Morris. He passed away in 96. He was a member of the original Mission Impossible crew, which was from 66 to 73. They did a television show that then Tom Cruise took and made the movies off of. So the movies came after this television show. And my father was one of the stars of that. And that was kind of what was the original question again? I'm so sorry.
I said that he kind of is interesting, the parallels that you both took, as he was in like Superboy and Wonder Woman. You go on to do Smallville and Doom Patrol.
Well, yeah, that's a whole another kettle of fish. But yeah, my father being the star of that show, it was a seminal show at the beginning of television as we know it, golden age of TV. And to grow up in that environment with him as the star of not just the number one show in the country, but the world, was an eye-opening experience for my sisters and I, for our whole family. It changed our lives exponentially.
And then to get to do, I don't know if I'd call it a reboot or like a follow-up series that you got to do with
your follow-up dad. I think the follow-up series is a bit more appropriate, you know. And Mission Impossible, our version, the new Mission Impossible, it was called, was started because there was a writer's strike at the time, way back in 86, 87. And so they had to find property that they could do that they didn't change a word of because it was a writer's strike. So Mission Impossible was so far ahead of its time in the 60s, early 70s, that they felt that they could bring that property back without changing a word of dialogue. Plots being the same because they were so ahead of their time at the time, and it would play well. Well, I got the job literally as my father's character, as Barney Collier, which was the character my father played in the show. So I got cast as Barney Collier, which was absolutely surreal. My father and I couldn't believe it. It was, I mean, that I would be an actor, that I'd be of the age that there would be a writer's strike and all this would happen was just too crazy, you know? At the zero hour, when we finally started to shoot, the writer's strike ended. They rewrote a lot of the stuff. I became the son of that character, which is how it happened.
And he went on to be in that one too. I think he was in at least three or four episodes actually playing, obviously,
yes,
your real life father, which,
right.
I mean, to be able to, it's multiple levels. I cannot imagine. I mean, to A, watch your father in Hollywood, B, to kind of, I don't want to say follow in his footsteps because I don't want to imply that your career was after his, but to be able to then act in this thing that was so important to your father that you're now getting to do with your dad. I cannot imagine the levels of surreal sublimeness.
It was, it's hard to describe, even having lived it, you know, because we were so proud of it when my father got the role of Barney Collier on the original Mission Impossible. It was such a huge role. He was one of the first African-Americans to star in a nationally networked show, primetime show. And so we were so proud of him to do that. And we lived through this incredible 7 years. The show was on from 1966 to 73. So we lived this amazing life with him. And then, you know, I'm just a little kid playing sports, really, you know, trying to draw cool cars. I was an art center guy. And then it just hit me, you know, I knew I was talented. I knew I had done some plays in school, and I just went on location with him on a movie, and I was 17 years old, right out of high school. And it like the bug bit me. I was like, I get it. This is great. You know, to play make-believe, you get a check. You start to figure out you're working with these amazing people around you. I love being on sets. They're amazing. If anybody's ever been on a TV show or a movie set, just to watch it, just to see the moving parts and the people that work on it. So as a kid, I was enamored with it all. So then to come full circle and leave that movie and go, yeah, Dad, this is what I want to do. Come back to Los Angeles, start studying acting for real. One thing leads to another, and boom, here I am on his show. You know, man, it was, he and I just really pinched ourselves every day. But every week he would call me when the show would air. like every week after the show would air. And he'd go, yeah, son, good job.
Wow.
Our show's still better.
So
our version is still better.
That little bit of good job, but you know, not quite as good as we did back in the day.
Don't forget, we're the legends. Don't forget.
And we've got in the chats, I'm trying to do better. I keep telling my audience each week, Phil, that I'm trying to do better about paying attention to their chat so no one feels ignored. Bill Blanky here in St. Louis, good evening. One of my favorite Seinfeld characters, Jackie Chiles, he says. So that's Bill Blanky here in St. Louis. Shannon Musler says, amazing story. How cool about your dad and getting to work with him. We had Theo Pegnlis on the show not too long ago, played Nicholas Black in that one. And he even said that for his money was one of his favorite projects he got to do was the Mission Impossible.
Yeah. Oh, me too. I mean, you know, not just because of my dad, but because of Theo. Theo and I had met each other on the daytime circuit. I did Young and the Restless. He did Days of Our Lives. And so we you know, it's a fairly close-knit group, that little clique. And we'd seen each other a lot over the years. And so when we got these roles, you know, it was great. It was though I already knew him. So when we went to Australia, which is where he's from, he was able to educate me about the Australian way of life. And I wasn't such a stranger there. I didn't feel like such a fish out of water with someone like him. And Tony Hamilton was also an Australian native. So they were kind of going back home, for better or worse for them. But for me, it was a journey. It was absolutely incredible. And the work was as good and as big as it could have been, as good a budget as we could have worked with, as good a writing as we could have worked with. We're working with Paramount Studios. So, I mean, they wanted for nothing. And it was an incredible adventure to be there shooting a show like Mission Impossible, where you're driving boats and cars and shooting guns and playing spy and you're doing different guises and disguises and characters. It was an actor's dream. So a very rare experience.
We've got, when I look at all the stuff, and again, I'm not trying to make this about your dad, but he led such a fascinating history. Please. As well with all of his stuff. I mean, the $6 Million Man and Fall Guy. I got to work with Lee Majors a couple of times. Sanford and Son, which for my money is one of the best comedies, TV comedies that's ever been written. Did you both talk shop a lot? Was there a lot of shop talk, or was it?
You know, I think this is what I was going to get to before that. I was like, what was the question? My dad and I have kind of crossed paths a couple times. One was Mission Impossible. The other was my dad did a show called Vegas with a guy named Robert Urich.
Yeah.
Back in the day. It was an Aaron Spelling Goldberg show. And I worked with Robert Urich on The New Love Boat. So it's like I worked with Peter Graves on Mission Impossible, who was with my father in Mission Impossible. And then I worked with Robert Urich on The New Love Boat, and my father worked with Robert Urich. I knew both of them when I was a kid. It was like, you know, I didn't follow my father's footsteps, but my goodness, he laid such great groundwork for me that to be in Mission or to work with Robert or to talk about him or to be on this journey, I'm honored. He passed the torch and I am grateful, and I hope to pass it to many young actors, whether they're my namesake or they're not. And it's just a pretty surreal existence that I've lived, and I continue to live it. It does not stop. It is ever green.
Was there ever any desire on your father or your mother's part, for that example, or for that matter, to shield you and say, well, maybe Hollywood, did they, because you said before you were going, maybe doing some art and design stuff, or were they like, hey, if this is what you want to do, go for it. Your dad's in the business. He knows the ropes and can show you the ropes. What was kind of the path for you there?
Oh, they didn't want it for me. I mean, it was hard for my father. You know, he did well. Yeah. But it was hard. And it was hard after, you know, being Black in America is tough. So to be Black in America and try to be in one of the most illustrious businesses that the world has to offer in the 60s certainly was not attractive. And I used to think, oh, I want to be the first Black president. I want to be the first. You know, being the first anything is daunting.
Yeah.
So many doors you have to kick down. There's so much the groundwork you have to lay, you know, and being the first of something isn't it. Being rich isn't it. Being famous isn't it. And I found out all of that as I grew up with my father. And they cautioned me about all of those things. And no, they did not want this for their son. And my sister Iona is an actor as well. And they didn't want it for their daughter either, because it's difficult, period. As an artist, being an artist is hard in the world. And my parents were very concerned about our welfare and our well-being and how we would make it in the world, how the world would perceive of us. My mom thought I was a very smart person and that I could be a lawyer. Funnily enough, I am. But yeah, they were very real about it. My parents were very real people. My mother came from a coal mining town in West Virginia. My father came from the urban streets of Cleveland. So the real world was very real to them, and Hollywood was not the real world. Mm. And so for us to be wrapped up in that, they were very mindful of how they counseled us. But when you are somebody who has a dream and a desire and a passion that lives beyond your people, it's best for them to support it, you know, and get out of the way. Yeah. And I think that was too much to my parents' good, was to get out of our way and let us find out for ourselves.
And back to the chats, it looks like, the show host from last hour, Dan, is still listening. So Dan Young says, this is a great guest. Thank you, Phil, for a great body of work.
Oh, thank you, brother. I appreciate that. On it goes. It continues.
Yeah. I mean, and we talked, I know, obviously, a lot of times when you're doing stuff, you can't talk about projects that are coming out. But when we, right before we went on air, you said the magic's just continuing. You're still going. Is there anything, I guess you're working on something now. Is it anything you can discuss at all?
Of course. Well, I just finished the Capital One campaign for March Madness with Charles Barkley and Spike Lee and Magic and Samuel Jackson. That was fantastic. So that ran the whole month of March for March Madness. And then, you know, we just finished this promo for Jerry for his film Unfrosted.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a commercial that has myself, Larry Thomas, and Allie Wentworth in it, as Shmoopy, Jackie Childs, and the Soup Nazi. So that is airing now, and you can see it on network or on YouTube or wherever you get your entertainment from. next week, I start a 2-episode arc on the Upshaws for Netflix with Mike Epps and Wanda Sykes and Kim Fields, all of whom I've worked with before, and I love them all. Was invited to do that and happy to show up tomorrow on set and ply my trade. And we're developing something that's really fun, which I won't talk about because it's not that I can't, it's just I won't.
Okay.
But it's something that's massive, major. And, you know, you'll want to talk to me after it happens because it's going to happen. And it's happening soon. We're going to have a huge meeting about this at the highest levels very soon. And I can't wait for what's to come.
Now I'm very intrigued and I want you to talk more, but I won't press you. It's amazing to me that, because we met briefly at Kevin's memorial last year and right. I've seen you obviously on all these shows that we've just talked about and some of the ones we haven't gotten to yet, but you're one of those people, and this sounds weird, I guess, but when you're in the room, there's a genuine just warmth that radiates from you. And I love the fact that I see someone like you doing well, because it seems like you put out such good energy into the world and stuff just keeps coming back to you, which I love seeing. That's a great, amazing thing to see.
Oh, well, thank you for that. I've learned a lot. I've made a lot of mistakes in this business. I'm not young in it. I feel like I've grown and evolved and continue to take the lessons that are given me and not stand on ceremony and think I know everything or it all begins and ends with me. That comes from my parents as well. You know, my father was big on, even though he was in a big show and he was a big part of it, it didn't revolve around him. And it took everybody to make this happen. Craft service to the number one on the call sheet, to the executive producers, to directors, to produce the whole thing, man. It's such a deep web, such a deep fabric of involvement that you're better served to know that you're a part and not the whole. You're better served to think that you're a team player. You know, you get better results that way. Yeah. And, you know, as a younger actor, I wish I'd have been told that. I did a seminar, you know, have less hubris, have less ego. You think you should have more ego and more hubris, that you should consider yourself more. It's counterintuitive.
Right. They always tell you fake it till you make it. Put that confidence and bravado out there. And I've never been one to be able to fake it. That's the problem. Nah. I'm always, I can't fake it. Nah. So I'm doing the best I can as it is. I'm assuming, just with the like we discussed, the body of work, do you remember the point in your career where you no longer had to audition, you were just getting offers?
Well, I still have to audition, and I think a lot of the people that you think wouldn't have to audition do. I remember somebody saying, and it might have been Christian Bale, saying, you know, no matter what you guys think about us, all of us are just vying for the roles that Leonardo DiCaprio turned down. metaphorically, he's not wrong. There's always a bigger fish. You know, there's always somebody like if Scorsese were to say, you know, I need you to read for this, I'm reading for it. Or I'm not even that level, but if it's a good project and something that you love something that really requires them to see you in this role. That's what that's our job. That's what I do. So auditioning and or not auditioning or being an offer only, which is sometimes what people want. I won't audition, but if you offer it to me, I'll do it. Those are misnomers and can get tricky because our job is to show up and represent the character, not ourselves necessarily, the character. And so auditioning is a part of representing that, especially for people who need to hear you say their words, see you walk the walk of the character, be in the character, no matter what you've done in the past. And anything that I've done in the past, and I made this mistake as a young actor, I would think, oh, it's another lawyer, or it's another young romantic lead, or it's a physical guy, or whatever it was. I've done that before. I've got tape. I've done this. No. You've never done this before. This character has never lived before now. There is no time but now for this person who actually is a human being that you're going to embody. And I firmly believe that as I go home to my wife and kids and to my house on the beach, that character's out there still fighting the good fight. And it's for me to come back and slip into their skin. So that has to happen at any time. It has to happen. I'm fortunate that I've worked with people like a Wanda Sykes, who's executive producing a show, and they can invite me in to play a role that they've considered for me. That's fortunate. Excuse me. But it isn't what you should bank on. It's what you should hang. It's not what you should hang your hat on. And in fact, it's almost better to be challenged to reach for something and then get it than to be given it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting the way you just phrased that too. You know, I've done this character type before. You told on the Justice League podcast that you did with Susan and I, which just came out. If you're listening right now to this, go back and listen. Our episode with Phil just dropped this past Tuesday, talking about Vandal Savage and the Savage Time. But during the course of our conversation, you mentioned that, you'd played a Klingon and you played a Jemadar and you were like, oh, it's a bad guy. It's a tough guy. And I can't remember exactly what the director's words to you, but it was very poignant what they said. If you remember the quote I'm thinking of.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They told me, they said, Phil, we know you played a Klingon. And the Klingons think that they're the baddest dudes in the universe. The Jem'Hadar actually are.
That was it.
So they don't have to snarl. They don't have to yell. They don't have to posture or beat their chest. They know what they can do.
Yeah, that was
it's great direction.
It's incredible because, like I said, you have played all these types of characters, but then there are those subtle nuances. Even the way when I was looking over the resume, you played Vandal Savage a number of times in a number of different projects. I'm assuming same type of thing. It was different playing him in the Lego version versus in the Justice League Unlimited version.
Yeah. Well, the Lego version is always more comedic, right? It's like, and so in Vandal Savage, in the Lego version, he was very caveman-y. So we see Vandal Savage, actually, when he was developed, when the meteor flies over and he becomes immortal, he's actually a caveman. And so he evolves quickly. They don't. And so in that, it's before the meteor really gets over the Earth, and he's like hitting women in the head and dragging them. So that was a silly Vandal Savage. But the one that I did for, what was it?
Justice League Doom?
Doom. He was even more refined than the first time I played him on Justice League. He was less of a snarler and more mellifluous. He was more of the smooth criminal in the second part of when I played him. So yeah, and Bruce Timm was always there to, let's make him different this way and let's carve him this way. And Andrea was always like, why don't we make him a little bit more this or a little less that,
It's amazing. I think we're going to get to all this. I need to take a quick commercial break. Do you mind sticking with me through a quick one?
Absolutely.
I appreciate it. Okay, so we're going to come back. Again, I'm watching the text. We have Howard Morton says, great show. Howard, listening from St. Louis. Shannon's very excited by my guest. And Nostalgic Pod Blast is listening, says, remembering Phil as the renegade child in the classic Star Trek episode, Miri. Yes, that was the one we discussed. It was started his career. We're going to take a very brief commercial break.
Hi, this is Nichelle Nichols, and you're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
Since Nostalgic Pod Blast pointed out Star Trek and the Children of Miri, we figured we had to come back with Nichelle Nichols bringing us back from commercial break. I want to make sure we talk about our comic book sponsor, the official comic book store of Geeks Me Radio, Bugs Comics and Games. If you're going to get some comic books, that's the best place in town to go as far as I'm concerned. I've been going to Larry, who owns Bugs, for longer than I'd care to say. We'll leave it at that. Before I had a driver's license, I'd get on my bike and I'd ride it up there all the way on West Florissant, if you're familiar with North County, in the snow sometimes because I was that fanatical about my comic books. Larry's now reopened a store, and here I am something odd years later, still going to Larry for my comic books. He's right there in O'Fallon on Bryan Road. You can easily get to it from either Highway 70 or from the Page Extension, 364. And he was packed. Obviously, as any of you know, it was Free Comic Book Day this past Saturday. And my goodness, I've never seen his shop that full. He had the free comic books plus 50% off everything else in the store. And I know that was making a lot of people smile. They were people just stacks of comics on the cash register checking out. So hopefully a lot of you heard about him here and a lot of you went and checked him out because of this show. And hopefully you'll go back. It's really important for these brick and mortar stores to support these places. It's great to get your stuff online, but when you've got real people behind it, that's the kind of business you want to support. And someone like Larry, who's been doing it for so long and loves comics as much as we, the customers, do. If you need a new comic book store, maybe yours closed during the pandemic and you haven't gotten back into it, check him out, Bugs Comics and Games, on Facebook as well as on Instagram. If you're listening from out of town, like our friends BK and Chance, check him out on Instagram because he puts up stuff there. And if you see something you like, say claim. He'll send you an invoice and then ship it securely to your doorstep. If you are local, though, make sure you join the Avengers Club. You can start saving money every single week on your new comics, your back issues, your toys, your games, your bags, your boards, whatever it is you buy. That way you don't have to sacrifice your hobby in this economy, and you can keep collecting to your heart's content. He's also buying comics, so if you want to divest yourself from a collection, feel free to give Larry a call. He'll give you a very fair price for your things. Bugs Comics and Games, very proud to have them as the official comic book sponsor here on Geek to Me Radio. And I know our guest, Phil Morris, you're a comic book guy. You've got comic books.
Massive.
Did you get to go out for Free Comic Book Day, or were you busy working your trade?
I haven't collected comics in a long time. What I collect now are the compilations, the hardcover. So I don't destroy the ones I have, because I have so many. I have over 20,000 issue collection. Man. And I have the ones that I got in Cleveland, Ohio in 1966 with my grandmother. I've still got those.
Oh, wow.
Those are Tales of Suspense with Iron Man and Captain America. I have the first Journeys into Mystery with Thor's that I got. I mean, I have Fantastic Four, like 10 through 100.
My gosh.
I was big into it, man. I mean, huge. When you would get, like back in the day, you would get the comic books. Then you would cut out and get like flower seeds. They'd send you seeds that you would sell to get a bike or a amp or a drum set. I would buy more comics. So I would take in 1968, $50 and send it to this Howard Bell or these guys in New York who had these collections, and they would send me 30, 40, 50, 60 books.
Wow.
At a time, because they were so cheap and they weren't expensive back then at all. They're all the ones I have now are, it's bananas how expensive they are, how crazy they are.
So this little acting thing that ends up not working out. You've got your comic book collection you could always sell, it sounds like.
Well, I could. But, having them helped me with my acting career, because it gave me information about all these things that we've been talking about. It gave me all the information on the Justice League. No problem. Martian Manhunter, my best friend. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It was like I knew these people from years and years of unconscious study. And so going into an audition, I know who Silas Stone is. You know what I'm saying? These are people who collect comic books, and everybody who's listening, they know. They know. This is not casual. This is a part of the fabric of your life. This was who you are as a kid. This was, if you had friends, you traded them. And this was, if you drew them, this was a part of how you learned to read, how you learned to imagine. They're all storyboards, so it's all films.
Yeah.
You know, in a graphic novel sense, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Denny Cowan and those guys, Carmen Infantino, those people, they weren't writing just for kids. They were writing for themselves. And so it was an expanded education. I'm very happy I collected comic books. Yeah, I'm one of those.
Our comic book sponsor, Larry, must have been listening, because he said a huge fan, and you're a very great actor, he says. So a lot of people loving our guest tonight, which I love to see. You mentioned Silas Stone, obviously, from Doom Patrol. That was one of the shows when they announced it. I'm like, okay, because that comic book was very unusual. Not only
that's
when
very
first,
diplomatic, yeah.
Right? I mean, Paul Kupperberg started out as the writer on that one, if I'm not mistaken, and helmed it for a while. And then Grant Morrison came in and it went just another
totally
direction.
Totally turned it on its ear, yeah.
Did you, and it wasn't something that a lot of people, like the mainstream, were reading because it went over to that DC Vertigo title. Were you a fan of it before you were ever cast in it, or did you have to kind of go back and do a little bit extra research?
Yeah, I had to do the research. I got all the graphic novels, but I was familiar, but not a fan. The same way I was familiar with Cyborg. You know, now remember, I'm not young again. I always say that a lot. And it was, you had to pick a side, right? Are you Marvel or DC? So for me, I was Marvel. I was Marvel for various reasons. But that means that the DC universe was not as readily accessible to me in my group. So I had to do some research on Cyborg and those kinds of characters that I did not have to do for the Marvel side of the street. So Silas Stone was in that bag of tricks as well. And so was Doom Patrol. And one of the reasons why they used Cyborg in Doom Patrol, which he was never in, was because people knew about Cyborg from the Justice League movies.
Right.
So the John Q public was aware of Cyborg from that. So to bring them to Doom Patrol, the TV show, they put Cyborg in the Doom Patrol cast of characters so that the people who weren't familiar with Doom Patrol kind of found it. And it worked.
Yeah.
It absolutely worked. And I thought it was one of the best shows. Teo was talking about Mission being one of the best shows he's been involved with. This is absolutely, if not the best, one of the best shows I've ever been involved
really?
With in my career. Oh, no, no doubt
my
about
gosh,
it.
And all the stuff you've done, that's high praise. I mean, that's amazing.
Oh, my gosh. The writing. I would read these scripts. I'm like, what are they going to do these poor people this week? What are they going to do to them this week? You know, it wasn't a superhero show as much as a show about self-identification and realization. And that I was so proud to be a part of that show.
And I don't understand how Diane didn't get some nominations or awards for her performance. That, I mean, I think it was probably because it was a comic book show and those kind of sometimes get not taken as seriously. But her performance, having to do all those personalities and just sometimes switching on a dime, that's amazing to me how she did that.
She's a genius. She's a genius. She has a great acting coach, Leland Duran, who's a great acting coach. She's also Javan Wade's coach, the guy who played my son.
Okay.
So he's a really talented acting coach, and he got these young actors to step up and reach deep, dig deep. And we're better for it. They're going to be wonderful talents in the future. And I was honored to share the stage with them every single time I was there.
I'm curious because you said I'm surprised to know that you still audition for things. I figured at your level, again, you'd get offers. At your level, do you still, because I always feel like I never know enough about anything I do, and I'm always trying to learn. Do you still take acting classes, or do you seek stuff out at all, or is it case by case?
The life of my work is my class right now. And some actors may go, no, you must study. And I am of two minds about it. I studied a lot when I was younger, and I studied with some incredible people, improvisational coaches, classic coaches, the method, all that stuff. I studied a lot. And I'm big on that for younger actors, especially. I think at a certain point you overdo it. You can study yourself into a hole where you're about the technique and not the life of the character. And so right now I'm trying to divest myself of my intellect, which is not shallow, and be able to perform more and more in the moment. And that takes less than more. So I do as much work as I can on the character. And then I just, when I get to set, I try to let it all go and let my interaction with another actor or with the situation take root. So I'm more of a liver. Like I go out and do things more. And I always recommend to young actors to don't live the life of an actor, live the life of a human. Climb mountains, race cars, swim, love people, you know, eat food, cook. Don't go to class and then go afterwards to drink with the coach and then hang out with actors, because you're not going to play an actor very often in your career. you're going to play humans. And I like to live my life and bring that to my work as opposed to live my work.
And I know Kevin Conroy said that when people always ask him, obviously, they'd say, how do I get into voice acting? He would always say, be an actor first, because it is, even though people think, oh, it's about making funny voices, it is acting. And I think what you just said kind of encapsulates that as well. You've got to have these experiences to draw upon. And that Eisner Award-winning story that Kevin just wrote right before he passed about he drew on all those things to be a better Batman. It's one of those stories. It's like, man, it's incredible to think about the life he led and the stuff he went through, but look where he was and how adored he was. And it's really a cool thing to see, to your point.
Well, yeah, we're a culmination, I should say, of our experiences. And as you gain more and more experiences, imagine you only have one experience. You only have so much to bring. So you want to have many experiences, a variety of experiences, and many reference points so that you can alight on those experiences with alacrity and agility. Mm. And you can go from one to the next. It makes you a more interesting person. Forget an artist. It just makes you an interesting person when you read more. And life thrills you. And you are moved to distraction by things. That's what we do as artists. We are moved to distraction. And hopefully it's interesting enough for people to pay attention to.
And if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Phil Morris. We've got him on here. The hour is never not long enough when I've got someone like you, Phil, because I feel like I would need about 3 or 4 hours to really get going. But we're going to take another very quick commercial break.
Hey, hi, listeners. This is Greg Berger.
Meet Grimlock, Dinobot leader from Transformers.
And guess what? You're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
Transformers.
Obviously voiced a well-beloved character in Men in Black series, which again was something that our guest Phil Morris was also part of. So many places we could talk about with all these things. But first, before we do, we'll make sure we tell you about our premier sponsor, the Greater St. Charles Convention and Visitors Bureau. If you've not been to St. Charles lately, I'm not sure what you're waiting on. Just go right across the Blanchette Bridge, and there it is, beautiful downtown St. Charles. The historic district is an amazing place to go visit. If you haven't been there for a while, you might want to go back and check, because every time I'm there, I see a brand new shop or a brand new restaurant that's just opened up that wasn't there a while ago. We just went down there for Burger Underground, some of the best burgers you're going to get in the area. If you're wanting, hopefully, Cinco de Mayo today. You celebrated at Margo, got some tacos and margaritas. They've got a great Peruvian restaurant down there as well. If you just want some barbecue, go hit up Salt and Smoke in the 500 block of South Main. There's not a bad meal on the street. And a lot of these are all independent franchises, either mom and pop places you're going to eat. And the shops along there, same thing. So as we talked about earlier with comic books, it's important to go support small businesses. They have a new anime shop that just opened up, which, again, I'm going to have to go down there and check out that. Or if you want to satisfy your sweet tooth, check out Sugar and Slice. Their macarons and their cinnamon rolls are the size of my head, and they're some of the best cinnamon rolls I've ever had. So whether you're a local and just haven't been there a while, or maybe you're out of town like our friend Phil and want to go visit someplace new in 2024, check out the City of St. Charles. Start your trip at the website, discoverstcharles.com. There's always something going on down there, whether it's one of their ice sculpting things they've got going on in the winter, or one of their big major festivals like Legends and Lanterns coming up in October. If you're a fan of Halloween, you need to go see Legends and Lanterns. You can go take axe swinging lessons from Lizzie Borden. We're bringing back the Wicked Witch of the West. She'll tell you how to help her find Dorothy. Where you can take pointers on how to locate witches from Abigail Williams. You can sing karaoke with the Phantom of the Opera, and that's just a few of the characters that are down there. Check out the website, discoverstcharles.com. As we always say, it's an historically good time. Spending just a little bit longer here with Phil Morris, the hour is flying by. We mentioned voice stuff, obviously, with Justice League and Vandal Savage. Greg mm-hmm. Berger, you did Men in Black with them.
I love Greg Berger.
I just saw him at Transformers Con in L.A. last month, and he's just one of the nicest human beings.
So sweet and so funny. One of the drier. He's so dry. I just dig him. That is the sign of a high intelligence right there, people.
Okay, well, see, I need to work on my dry sense of humor so people think I'm smart.
Me too.
You're telling me. When you do all these animated shows, we talked about Doom Patrol being probably one of your favorite shows. When you do with these animated, because you've done some where you're featured in many episodes, and then there's some where you're just coming in and playing a part in an episode here and there. Do you have a favorite animation, one that you've been a part of?
Animation's weird, you know, I don't recommend my process about this to anybody, how you get into it at all, really. I don't. Because I maybe I shouldn't say this. I've never taken a vocal class. I've never taken an animation class. I've never done that. I've only trained as an actor. And Kevin Conroy is so right when he says this. Know who you are as an actor first. And then when you know what that is, you can apply it to so many different areas of the work of an actor, whether that's a commercial, like my acting coach would go, why are you doing commercial workshops? I'm going to teach you how to act, and you're going to be able to cut that down into a 30-second. into a 60 second. But if you've only learned a 60 second bit of reality and you go do a movie, you're screwed. So learn full stop what you're going to do, and you'll be able to parse it and put it into the areas that you need it. That's how I've trained myself. So no, I haven't taken an animation workshop, and I haven't taken a vocal workshop. I take acting classes, and I can then, because of my love for the medium, if it's animation, I love animation. I've grown up with it my whole life. So I use all that I've learned as a child, which is wonderful, to further my career as an animation voice actor. If I'm an audiobook person, then I love reading. I love what I feel when I read. I try to impart that, imbue that into the books that I'm reading. So I don't have a favorite almost anything. I love it all equally. It's like saying, who's your favorite child, in a way? And I can't do that. And voiceover came to me very inordinately. When I worked with Andrea Romano, I don't ever remember auditioning for them, ever. I remember coming in and I was just working. They just gave me roles. How they knew I could do it, I don't know. That's their genius. I do not know. I literally came in the first time to read for them. I was playing Imperiex in the Legion of Superheroes. I'd never worked with them in my life. How did they know I could play this villain, this incredible? Imperiex is this incredible, wild. How do they know I could do that without destroying my voice, which I never did? And then I would come back and I'd play Vandal Savage. I never read for Vandal Savage. They just gave it to me. Somehow they just knew. And somehow I had the facility to do it. And I challenge myself all the time. I know this is a bit of a ramble, a bit of a rant, but this is how I do it. And I like it because it's kept me fresh all this time. I don't beat myself up with class. I don't beat myself up with, you know, over-intellectualizing it. I see how it feels to me. My hands are sweating now because I know this is the truth. I see how it feels to me. I see how it permeates my soul. If there's some truth in there, my job is to find it and then to bring it to the character. And through the character, I bring it to you. So it's hard to say I like doing DC animation more than I like doing the Chuck Berry audiobook, The Life of Chuck Berry. I mean, that's special. Yet, so is doing Justice League, and so is doing Green Lantern, and so is doing Spider-Man. And so, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
These are all seminal characters and seminal impressions in our lives. It's your whole audience has that in them. If you look at behind me, I got Wheaties boxes. I got the last episode of Seinfeld. I got Vince Lombardi over there. I got Kobe Bryant and Formula One races over there. I love the dynamics of our lives. And I've been very fortunate to find a profession that allows me to express that. I hope that answered your question.
It did perfectly. And I told my executive producer, Joey V, when right before you came on in the last hour, he said, are you nervous? I said, I am, because we had Phil on the Justice League podcast, and there's no awkward pauses. You're very deliberate. It's almost like you know what you're going to say. I said, I feel like I'm having a conversation with, like, Grand Chess Master, because you were just so, like, everything you say almost sounds like it's scripted, and you knew ahead of time what you were going to say and what my questions were. And it's a little intimidating, but that's, I think, what makes you so brilliant, too, at the same time.
I think I know what you're talking about. I'm just honored and grateful. It keeps you humble. And I'm not an person. I'm like, I was ready for this as well. I knew we were going to do this interview as well. So I want to be as good a subject as you are an interviewer. I want to be as good a performer as you are an audience. And that's on me. That's my business. Your business is your business. So if I take care of my business, I got no worries.
Yeah.
So far, so good.
Yeah. And in the chat, someone you'll know is listening. Dan Reba said, Phil is great.
Dan. Thank you, brother.
Speaking of Justice League, he's right there. Dan, and again, Dan's another one, just a wealth of knowledge. I always love talking to Dan, and he's another one I feel like I just need to he needs to write a book, Dan Reba, by the way, just all the stuff he's done. But to your point League, Andrea, I know everyone I've had on who's ever worked with Andrea said she knows what she wants and she can easily get it out of people. And Susan Eisenberg even said, I don't think anyone ever turned Andrea down. That's why you're getting people like Nathan Fillion, like yourself, like Clancy Brown coming in because, oh, yeah, Andrea's doing it. Sure, I'll come in and, you know, and play. And that's
and she offers you gold.
Yeah.
She offers you gold.
She knows ahead of time that, yes, you will be perfect for this part in Legion of Superhero, and yes, you will be perfect as Vandal Savage. And she just had, like, precognitive abilities. Andrea Romano, someone needs to save her brain and put it in the Smithsonian. That's all I'm saying.
They need to do a documentary on her.
Yeah, no kidding.
We need to know about her because her life is crazy good. She was an actor at first. That's why she knows actors so well.
Yeah.
So she knows what she hears. She knows when it's right. She knows when it's wrong. She knows how to appeal to you in a way without giving you a line reading. She knows how to give you modulated up or take a sip of water or take your time. Or, you know, one of the best directions I ever got from anybody, and Andrea was one of them, and I think she might have said this to me. I have a habit, because I do think quite a bit, of speaking very fast. And you lose dynamics. Forget information. You lose intention when you do that. You run over moments, right? She, very much like Andy Ackerman, who was directing me with Jackie Chiles, and you'll see where I'm going with this. Jackie Chiles is a very fast-talking huckster, basically. And so as I'm rehearsing Jackie for the week when I first started it, I'm, you know, just a mile a minute going. And I think I was doing that with Andrea as well. She said the same thing that he said. He said, and she said, Philip, let your character breathe. Let them live in full. You got this. And as soon as they said that, and you could just sit back and go, okay, I don't have to, where's the fire? Nowhere. I can sit in this character, give them their due, as we do in life. We're in this conversation. I'm not rushing through this. I don't know what I'm going to say next, really. So I take the time to digest it and then regurgitate it, right? That's what good actors do. When you watch a De Niro and he doesn't say anything for 20 seconds, yet he's saying everything, that's because he's letting his character breathe.
Yeah.
You know, and so Andrea knows how to appeal to actors in that way. That's why she is a genius.
Yeah.
She's a genius.
And like I said, we've got 7 minutes here before I have to start the outro music and everything. And there's so many things I didn't get to. You mentioned Seinfeld, so I want to go to that because, again, I don't know what it was. And maybe you can speak to this, having experience. I just interviewed Patton Oswalt. That interview will play next Sunday. But that he got his start on Seinfeld. He just had a scene with George's character. I should say Jason's character, George. But
George.
I'm very curious. You worked on that show several episodes. There's the characters you mentioned, like, you know, Schmoopy and the Soup Nazi and, you know, all these different people who that series, in my mind, had all these background characters that were full front, just like right there. And they're so memorable. In your experience being on that show, what do you think it was that made those characters pop, even in some cases, stealing the thunder of the main cast?
Casting. They were great. They were the best casting directors in the city. And excuse me that I don't remember all the other actors will remember names. I'm terrible with all that stuff. But they knew. They knew. When I read for Jackie, there was only two people who read for it. I was there with Ted Lange from Love Boat, Michael Boatman from so many things, but Spin City, Michael Dorn from Star Trek, me, and Michael Dorn and I were the only two who read. And so I started reading, and I finished like three sentences. He goes, finish. He goes, you're going. You're going over here. And so we went, and they knew. He knew that I was the guy. He could feel it. And I think with many of these actors like Patton and other people, they could sense this was the person for this character. They knew Larry and Jerry very well. They knew their voice. And so they provided exactly the type of person that they would want. In fact, this is to prove my point even more. So I get Jackie Chiles. I go to the set that Monday. You have a 5-day work week. You're working on the character 5 days. I've got to work with different stuff. You know, like I said, I was speeding up, slowing down. Blah, blah. Jerry is on the set watching me work. And I know you got to go out of this. But he's watching me work. And I'm trying different stuff and different intonations. He goes, wait, hold on. What are you doing? Are you doing something different? And I said, well, yeah, I got 5 days. I want to try to figure out different stuff. He goes, no. You do exactly what you did in my office when I hired you. I want you to groove that for the next. Can you do that? I'm like, no problem. So what I'm saying is the casting directors gave them exactly what they wanted. There was no adjustment for me to make. I had it. And he just wanted to underscore, you got this. Don't mess it up. You know, we hired you for this. Give us this.
Yeah.
They knew.
It's like I said, it's one of my it may have been my age when I watched it, but for me, Seinfeld is probably top five TV shows of all time, just between the casting and the writing, right up there with the original Twilight Zone series, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's just one of those TV shows that I think is always going to stand the test of time. And you've been lucky to be in so many series like that. I wanted to ask you about Dick Van Dyke. We're not going to have time working on Diagnosis Murder.
I'd have to come back.
I was going to say, if you're up for it, I would love to have you back, and we can maybe talk about that project that you don't want to talk about at the moment, and we can discuss that as well.
You're not going to stop yourself. Trust me.
if people want to keep up with you online, people want to find out more about you, website, are you very active on social media? Is anything like that people can find you?
Yeah, pretty good on social media, at The Phil Morris anywhere, Facebook and Instagram. That's one handle, so you can check it out there. And I respond to all the good stuff. And if you hit me with something negative, you just might get a little Jackie Chow's back. I'm just saying.
Well, see, that might entice some people. You got to watch out. If you don't mind, I usually don't do this on air, but if you wouldn't mind, you've heard some of the return liners we have coming back from commercial break from some of the celebrities we've had on. Would you mind if you give me some Jackie Chow's, and you're listening to Geek to Me Radio in you're Phil Morris as Jackie Chow's, but you're listening to Geek to Me Radio, if you know what I'm asking for.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, you ready? Hey, you're listening to Phil Morris, or Jackie Chow's, as the case may be, and you're listening to Geek to Me Radio. Tune in, tune on, and turn on, baby, because I'll be right here.
Absolutely brilliant. again, I've been fortunate enough now to talk to you twice, and it's a great pleasure every time. I'm looking forward to the next time we have you on. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and really, thank you so much for your time on a Sunday. I appreciate it greatly.
My pleasure, brother. Best to all your listeners, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you. Be well.
Take care.
There he goes. What an exceptional talent. I'm so fortunate we got to talk to him. Hopefully you all enjoyed that. From the chats, it appears you did enjoy it quite a bit. Larry says they're real and they're spectacular. Yes, one of the, Terry from, I can't think of her last name, from Seinfeld, and she was also the Bond girl in Tomorrow Never Dies. Anyway, Hatcher, thank you. Joey knew it. Hatcher. Chance says Michael Dorn from Chips. Yes, that's another, and Star Trek, obviously. But yes, I forgot he was on Chips. We didn't get to the Fall Guy preview because we had so much time. Thank you. Dan Reba just said Hatcher, Lois Lane. Thank you, Dan. I'm an idiot. Obviously, my brain is going. Just an amazing talent. I'm so glad he was able to stick with us for the whole hour. And it sounds like he wants to come back. So if you didn't get to ask your question this time, make sure you tune in next time. Make sure you go to youtube.com, find Geek to Me Radio, and hit the subscribe button. We're trying to ramp up to 1,000 subscribers so I can hit that little tiny milestone that YouTube wants me to hit. So if you could do that for us, we would appreciate that greatly. YouTube.com/Geek2Me Radio and hit the subscribe button. You click the little bell notification and you will get an update every time we go live. When Joey's in studio, we run video like this. So hopefully you'll enjoy that. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram. We had a big thing happen with our road to our Comic-Con, Two Rivers Comic-Con, coming in Memorial Day of 2025. We brought on a brand new sponsor, and we'll get to more of that as we solidify details. We're a little more than a year out, but I'm so excited with the direction this convention is taking and how it's shaping up. So please follow me on social media at Geek to Me Radio on Instagram and Twitter. We're going to do a Facebook page for Two Rivers Comic Con, and we're going to have a website up and running hopefully soon as well. Hello, Christian from Legend of Traveling TARDIS just tuned in. Thank you, Christian. Make sure you check out that show as well. In addition to the Nostalgic Pod Blast, make sure you check out The Legend of the Traveling TARDIS, and obviously check out BK on the Air, too. It's podcast people supporting podcast people. I love to see it. That's going to do it. Thank you to Joey B for making the show sound and look as good as it does. Thank you to all of you who checked in the chat tonight. I appreciate all of you in there, and we'll do it again next week. Until then, my friends. It's not in the way you watch a zombie. It's not in the way you watch the Flash. It's not in the way. It's not in the way you play Mario Kart.
Good night.